Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's the drilly, Lush Uno, and a lot of people have been saying, bring back the LA heavy hitters. That's you know what I mean? Up. The real lyricists, the real MCs, the top level creatives. And so I had to, you know, my old dear friend.
Yes, sir.
Mike Eagle.
Well, we go back, don't we?
Yeah, you feel me? Like, yeah. We go back. We go back like the front seat. That's you feel right. me? Like, yeah.
But, yes, sir.
No, it's an honor to get to chop it up with you. I'm gonna go on record and just say, I feel like you're one of the most important artists in the world, like, and a great representative of hip hop culture. You're like, I feel like you're a real ambassador.
Well,
you
know? I feel that. I like that second part. I'm pretty comfortable with that because I do feel like I'm able to access a lot of spaces
right.
that other people aren't able to go in just because, you know, I can code switch a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I know how to write an email real good. Like, I can slide into a bunch of different spaces based on that. In terms of my importance, man, it's like I always feel weird when people say that because I could see the potential of that, but you know, that's not often represented in what life reflects back at me. You know what I'm saying?
Financially and things of that
financially,
nature.
Financially, status-wise, you know, the conversations I'm in, the conversations I'm not in. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I think part of this whole indie thing is that when you participate in music on an indie tip, for no matter how much popularity you might want to have, you have to accept a certain amount of invisibility, you know, and it just it hits you in weird ways. In some spaces you go to, people really mess with you. People really know what you did and what you up to. In other places you don't exist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's definitely not that many quote unquote indie rappers, and definitely not from the scene that we come from that are traversing these waters of the spaces, you know, being listed amongst Rolling Stones top albums of the year and billboards, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like top, you know, Pitchfork, you know, like being on these prestigious lists. Something that I've, I feel like you're the kind of artist that my parents, I love my parents to death. My dad, actually, he's been, you know, both my parents are from New York. My mom's from the Bronx.
Okay.
My pops is from the Upper West Side.
Oh, yeah. You hip-hop in your blood.
Oh, yeah. It's in my DNA. Yeah. My grandparents are from East Harlem. Okay. Like, it's literally in my DNA.
Jeez.
My father actually was, you know, a big jazz drummer. He was a protege of Philly Joe Jones, who was Miles Davis's drummer back in the day and all that. So he was, you know, there wasn't too many white dudes at that time taking the bus all the way uptown and hanging out with these dudes until they was slumped over off of whatever they was doing and all that. But, and it's funny because you'll understand why I'm giving you this background when I get to where I'm going here. His stepfather, who's the man that raised him, was a conductor, a classical conductor. And he would always like tell my dad, like, you know, what you do, this jazz, it's not music. You know what I mean? It's good, but it's not music.
Right.
And I had very similar dialogue to him growing up
about
hip hop.
Of course.
And what wound up, and obviously, you know, like they would see Jay-Z performing at the Grammys and Kanye and be like, okay, like this is kind of good, but still weren't fully embracing it. And then what actually kind of pushed them over the edge and made them acknowledge hip hop was Hamilton. And you see where I'm going with this now. And my dad is one of my favorite quotes. And, like, you know, I love him to death, but this I have to put you on blast, Pops. He said, the thing that's great about Hamilton is it's like they took hip-hop and combined it with music.
Mm. Damn.
Yeah.
That's mean as hell.
Scandalous, right? Yeah. And he doesn't even realize what he was saying is out of pocket. Right. You know what I mean? But, and personally, look, I understand the level of artistry that Hamilton is, like, right. And it's an incredible accomplishment. Shouts to, you know, Lin-Manuel and all that. I don't like it, though. You know what I mean?
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
But that's part of the, you know, the whole discourse around it is like, yeah, it's this hip-hop thing that a lot of people in the hip-hop generation can't even afford to to watch.
Like Lin-Manuel, I know you as a dude that my homie Immortal Technique bullied in high school.
Right.
That's what I know of you. And like, which is like super condescending of me to even, but that's literally like.
But yeah, I mean, I think his you know, his journey does reflect that. And I don't know much about his journey, but I know that like him and his people, they used to do that Freestyle Love Supreme thing in New York. Mm-hmm. And like, they love hip hop in that, you know, brainy, nerdy way that like a lot of us did.
Right.
You know?
And absolutely.
And they was able to put it together with different elements to make something like Hamilton. You know?
Right. The children of organized confusion and things like that. Right. And like just high level, you know, cerebral hip hop music.
Bro, but when he did, and this is just a quick aside, but like the reason I kind of do mess with him. Did you ever see when he hosted SNL?
I actually did not.
He rapped his whole monologue, and it was incredible.
That's what I'm saying. Like he nice. So I'm not gonna go out here and say he's whack. It's just not. And I think it's beyond what he's doing, but it's statements like what my dad said.
It's what Hamilton means,
right? Yeah. And you know, like what it means to these like older white people, and the way they can kind of look at hip hop overall in a really dismissive manner, but co-sign that.
Right.
And see, like, I feel like you're able to kind of transcend those boundaries. Like, I wish my parents knew about Open Mike Eagle.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because maybe I'm saying something that might translate to them a little easier than a lot of other rappers' subject matter or.
Absolutely.
You know, that sort of thing. I feel that.
It's like really lofty subject matter. But here's the thing, like, and. I know you describe, there's a lot of different ways you describe your style, and you're so much more than a rapper at this point.
For sure.
You're way more than a rapper. Just like, but as an MC, you know, you talk about art rap.
Mm-hmm.
What defines art rap? What's the difference between art rap and not?
It's so crazy, man, because I don't say that no more. But when I started saying it, and this was when my first album came out in 2010, like, I was like, I'm about to go hard with this phrase.
Ain't no luncheon like an art rap luncheon, because an art rap luncheon's so smart.
Yeah, art rap party. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was, so it was like, there's two things happening at that time. And I think it's really important that this phrase comes out of that time. Like, just 2009, 2010, like, mainstream rap was just hella boring at that time, man. It was just like the most, you know, homogenized, like, you know, everything was club music. Some of the street stuff was good, but nothing was really like exciting.
2009, 2010, like to me, that's like Wiz Khalifa and Currency were kind of coming up. They weren't quite mainstream yet. Kendrick and them were coming up, and J. Cole. But
exactly. It was like the people who would come to make it interesting was bubbling, but they wasn't like.
Blue and Exile, I think, dropped that year.
Exactly, you know, there's a lot of one-hit wonders around that time. Like, you know, everybody was kind of following like the Rick Ross.
It was a lot of,
Jay was kind of in that in-between space. It was like Holy Grail around
then. I was going to say like Kingdom Come era and all
like,
that.
He didn't kind of know what kind of statement to make. And this was right before Kanye really, really like hit and made it artsy.
Right.
Like really, this is right before Twisted Fantasy.
Exactly, which was, I think, 2011.
Right. And so that kind of put a whole different focus and opened up like this thing that Lil Wayne was playing with, because he was at the top, right?
Yep.
But he was really embracing his own weirdness in a way that was very singular to him, but that started to open the space up too. When he started like skateboarding, when he started calling himself an alien, like, oh, things were at this point where they were just starting to open up and you could be something other than what the traditional club rapper was thought of then. But for the most part at that moment, it was a lot of sameness. And so that was one thing that was happening. And then where I was and what I was paying attention to was stuff like Shabazz Palaces, stuff like Danny Brown, Serengeti. There was this new wave of like underground people doing really interesting shit. And like,
and it's funny because Shabazz Palace has been around for so long.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Shout out to my man Ishmael. Yeah. From Diggable Planets to Cherry Wine to Shabazz. He's always kept it weird. Like, you know what I'm saying? Even after the Grammys and all that. But I'm looking at what's happening in the underground, and I want to contextualize myself with that stuff. Mm. And I was thinking about, I remember I was driving to Vegas. It was one, you know, a long kind of, you know, 4 or 5 hour drive, and you just kind of driving, thinking. And I was thinking about, like, rock music got all these subcategories.
Right.
You can be bluegrass, you can be punk, you can be electronic, you can be all progressive, you can be all these different things. Alternative, heavy metal. Rap is just rap, you know? And I'm like, damn, they got an art rock. And you know, when you hear something called art rock, you come into it with different expectations.
Do you consider art rock like prog rock, kind of like?
I think it's kind of like prog. I think about stuff like Stereolab.
Okay.
Or, Broadcast.
A lot of European stuff.
Yeah, some European stuff, yeah. But just like, you know, you some people even might call like Radiohead art rock.
Right,
you know,
which and it's funny because I always called it Britpop, but they like evolved past that.
Right, because it's not just like simple, you know, easily palatable mainstream chord progressions. It's like they get kind of weird, you know?
Very, especially starting with Kid A, then you got a sharp left turn.
Exactly, so I wanted a space made psychologically in rap for people to be weird, do cool stuff, to have a phrase associated with us. So when you came, when like my dream was to have like a section in a record store like Amoeba, where it's just the art rap section, and you thumbing through that, knowing that you're coming to that expecting to hear something different than what you might be hearing on the mainstream. But since that time, the mainstream got weird.
It did.
You know?
Well, it's interesting you brought that up. Because to me, when the mainstream got weird is Atlanta. You know what I mean? Is when all the Atlanta trap rappers started blowing it. I'm talking about like post Jeezy and T.I. I'm talking like about Thug. Young Thug, you know, Pee Wee Longway, that whole, even a little bit later, Playboi Carti. And to me, and I'm really interested to get your take on this.
Well, to me, that's the wave that started with Wayne embracing his weirdness. I think he made it where Thug could be weird and Carti could be weird and Uzi Vert.
Yeah.
You know, I think Wayne really doesn't get the credit for, because when he was doing that, when he was top of the mainstream, like there was no reason to think that that would work. There was no reason to think that that would open up this whole lane of self-expression for people getting million-dollar contracts and having the most, you know, mass appeal potential in the world, but, you know, can rock a nice elegant dress on the cover.
I was going to say, literally in a skirt.
Like, I really think I can point a lot of that back to him. And I think there's a multiplying factor. There's what Wayne was doing, there's what Kanye was doing. You know, Drake to a certain extent, I wouldn't call it what he was doing weird, but I think he opened up a vulnerability lane. Mm-hmm. That just made it where when you get to that level, nobody's expecting you to do the same old thing. You can do the same old thing if you want to, but if you're not, ain't nobody mad at that no more. And that's all I ever really wanted for the genre, was for people's expectations to not be so narrow. And I feel like we're here now. I feel like, man, and I think this year's album releases really kind of put it on display, where like even the mainstream rappers know they no longer have to compete with each other.
No.
Kendrick don't have to make the same album as Drake. He don't have to make the same album as J. Cole. You know, like you can, you as a mainstream artist, even though there's a whole floor in a building full of office workers who literally depend on your album selling what it's supposed to sell for them to stay employed, even though it's still that much pressure, that pressure doesn't result in you having to do a cookie cutter thing.
1,000%. Yeah. Now you, obviously, you know, I know your origins go back to Chicago, but, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But you know, when you moved to LA, you were a part of the Project Blowed Collective, and which I want to delve into a little bit more of as well. But one thing that I've always found is, to me, what rappers like Young Thug and even Migos when they first came out, and Pee Wee Longway and all those ATL guys, mm-hmm. to me, it was pretty much the same thing as Project Blowed, except for instead of talking about, you know, incense-esque topics and, you know, and exploring more esoteric themes, right. they're talking about dope dealing, gangbanging, and designer, shit, but it's the same, like, they're flipping styles with the same dexterity as what you guys were doing. Do you feel like there's truth to that?
I do. I just talked to Riddlor from CVE recently. I had him on my podcast, and that's one of the questions I was asking him. It's like, because a lot of what they're doing, you know, I really think CVE and crews like that around LA, Hip Hop Clan, like, they were doing that. You know, they still do that.
Right.
But it's just like the way that, I think the main difference is this. In places like Atlanta, in places like Minneapolis, and even starting now, like now at this point, in places like Chicago, those cities really mess with their local artists.
For sure.
You know, and there's a real investment from people to like boost up their local rap heroes. LA never cared. LA ain't never cared. LA like, LA needs you to go get famous everywhere
somewhere else.
And then for Dr. Dre to come pluck you up, you know what I'm saying? Or else like, you know,
no, they 1,000.
They don't really, so, you know, so you have, you've had people who have been incubating those styles, like you said, forever and just not gotten the credit for it. And I think sometimes that's a little tragic to me, you know what I'm saying? Cause like, I wish that people, I guess just dug under the surface a little bit more, because I bet everybody who loved Migos would love Hip Hop Clan, would love CVE.
Right. You know? Right. 1,000%. Especially, and it's funny you made that statement about LA, because a lot of people think I'm from the Bay Area because when they first met me, that's like when I kind of rose to prominence in hip hop. Not prominence. That,
I know what you know.
You know what I mean. Like
notoriety. Yeah.
Whatever type of notoriety I have, as minimal as it may be. Like, but that was stemmed from the Bay Area.
Which if I'm listing places where they support their own, the Bay is probably
high on
the
list.
It's probably the top place. Because even in Atlanta, like, even in Atlanta, they support their own. But part of the reason that happens is that the people who, like, you know, that fund certain artists down there, they pay the money that they have to pay to get it on Atlanta radio.
Right.
So they get people into it early.
Or the strip clubs, however they break records
exactly
out there.
Exactly. Like, they participate in that ecosystem, so they blow up music locally first. But it is a large ecosystem that you do got to pay to get into. Where, like, the Bay, it ain't about that. No. It's like, they'll just check for you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And, you know, obviously that's like the mecca of the independent market. Right. Another place that's really similar, I would say, like Houston and Memphis, they're all kind of on that tip as well. Right. But that was a, it's funny that I didn't really start getting recognized by LA, town where I grew up in, until the Bay started jacking me like that. Yep. And it was a, it's kind of weird how that works. Now, recently, I don't know if you know this, but Almighty Suspect, one of my fellow podcasters over here.
I was tripping. I texted Cool when I saw that. I'm like, wait a minute.
so you were, I mean, we all knew him since he was a little ass kid.
I don't know if I ever actually met him. I probably have.
Right.
But I've been knowing about his music for a minute. All City Jimmy, you know,
brother
put me on his music like 5-6 years ago.
And it's funny because you could, as stylistically different as it is, you could hear a little bit of the Blowed. Definitely hear his pops in there.
Yes.
Rifleman LA Cool. Now, recently, a few days ago, we were having a discussion on one of the news segments we do. And there was a back, it was a rare occasion where on No Jumper we're discussing battle rap. So obviously I'm real excited because
does that not happen a lot?
Not too often. It does to an extent, but you know what I mean? Like this isn't necessarily, it's a much younger crowd. They're not really focused on. Yeah, there definitely are exceptions to the rule, but but there is a debate kind of ensued going back and forth between Almighty and the homie AD, really dope rapper from Compton, one of the main podcasters over here too.
Okay.
And AD's in his early 30s and has been rapping in LA for a long ass time, like outside. Yep. Everybody knows AD. He had never heard of Project Blowed.
Yeah, I believe it.
And it's crazy because then I was like, bro, have you never heard pistol grip pump on my lap at all times? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's like the lineage right there. But mm-hmm. is it kind of interesting to you? Like, why do you feel like the influence of the bloat is still prevalent, but why do you feel like a lot of this generation isn't really tuned into it like
because
that?
Because I think, honestly, if you really look at the bloat, like, the bloat stopped happening around, like, 2013, 14, like, mm-hmm. really week to week. Like, when I got here, like, and I moved here permanently in 04, it was still going week to week.
Right.
And we kept it going. I really want to say another 10 solid years, but then, you know, there was an incident that happened in the blow where Ben Caldwell, who that's his spot.
Shouts to the OG.
Quadruple shout out to Ben Caldwell, the man. Something happened in there. Because, you know, I think the thing that people don't really understand about the blow, because like you said, it's got the incense, it's got the dashikis, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got people in there grooving, dancing and all that. But the blow is in the middle of, like, 2-3 different hoods.
That's in the Fodies hood right there.
It's, like, on the edge of a couple things. It's a real active area.
And absolutely.
People who are a part of the blow, who grew up in L.A., even if they wasn't banging, that's a part of their life.
For sure.
You know, so, like, occasionally street stuff will bubble up in there. Whenever that happened, Ben would shut it down for a while. But, like, that last incident that happened, he just really, like, you know, put a pause on it for a while. I still think there's room for it to maybe come back. Like, it's been so long and everything's kind of blown over. And, you know, but it was getting to that point where, and it gets to that point sometimes where street stuff bubbles up in there and it. Like, a lot of times the bloat has, like, a temple feel where you don't disrespect it.
Right.
But then, you know, certain incidents just people lose their minds and then stuff happens and it gets really real in there. But to answer your question, I think if it was still a week-to-week thing that people could really still go to and sign the list and get on and rhyme, I feel like the connection would be more immediate for people. Mm. You know, now I feel like it's more of a legacy thing. It's more like, yeah, we still get together. We had the anniversary. If you look at what Verbs is doing with Bananas.
That's what I was going to say. Like, there are still, which to me is the closest thing to the spirit thing.
It's
of
in the
blow.
Same room.
Shout
it's monthly
Verbs.
Instead of weekly. Super huge shout out to Verbs. You know, it's definitely carrying on the spirit. But Bananas is a different thing of its own, too. Like, you still got people. You still got super sharp MCs that come in mm-hmm. and you know, it's people performing, it's people rapping outside. But it doesn't carry the name Project Blow. So people don't necessarily know that that's part of the lineage. And I think that's, like, now it's at the point where you got to know somebody from the blow to know about the blow because it's not a thing that's still happening, you know?
It's so strange, too, mm-hmm. because to me, it's still, like, and it's just because of the way my brain has been wired since the 90s when I was a youngster in high school going over there and all that. Like, that's synonymous, you know, like 43rd and, you know what I mean? Like, that's literally, there's no other way to refer to that than as the blowed. But, no, it's definitely a new era, and I feel like that's something that's drastically missing. And now
I do, too.
You know.
But the thing that always trips me out, and I learn about these things, because I don't know about AD, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But for him to be outside and having been rapping, you say he's 30, he's probably been rapping in L.A. 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah, for sure he has.
That means he's been rapping someplace I don't know about.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. It's like there's different pockets of scenes. This L.A. is so big and, like, you know, different things happen in different hoods. And it's just like, damn, I don't know. You know what I'm
saying?
Now,
to be fair, he is from Compton.
Right.
And Compton is kind of its own world. It's its own planet.
But I don't know, like, where do people perform in Compton? Where do people go to get heard in Compton? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, like, look, your moniker, Open Mic Eagle, you come from the open mic scene going back to Chi-Town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there used to be all kinds of open mics all over the place. I feel like that's pretty much an antiquated concept at this point.
And that's, but that is so maddening to me, is confusing to me, because, like, with all of the music that's being made right now, like, we've never been able to make music easier.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that more than ever we would need places to come perform songs.
One would assume.
You know? So it's like, it's so wild that, like, yeah, this consumer technology is at an all-time high, but the places that we have to perform is at an all-time low? Like, how does that work? I feel like the demand should be higher than ever.
Well, and I like you would think, but I think that's kind of as a result of back in the day. I don't know about you, but if I wanted to find other MCs to collab with, if I wanted to find producers to work with, we had to go outside.
Right.
You know what I mean? We didn't have the liberty of social media, and we didn't have, you know, prosumer quality audio gear that, or even recording on our damn iPhones and shit. You know what I mean? Like,
I think you make a great point. So, because what you're speaking to right now is that you don't need it as much for the networking now, because you can do all that online.
Right.
But yeah, I guess.
In fact, I could do a song with someone from Germany tonight.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think just as an MC, and I think this goes along with the fact, too, that like a lot of cats, they'll do shows right now and they're rapping over their own lyrics. They don't really know their own songs a lot of the time. And I know that there's a whole different way to engage with performance where that doesn't really matter so much. But if you look at like the verses with the Lox and Dipset, like, oh, there is something to being an MC and like knowing how to do that. And I think that's kind of what's getting lost.
Absolutely. And it's people will say that MCing isn't necessary or it's antiquated until it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know, I've seen a Drake concert. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like I never seen a Jay-Z concert live, but I've seen him perform on video. Like,
he rap his ass off.
You know what I'm
saying?
He's
rapping the whole time.
Wayne, Ross, Cole, like, ain't none of these people half-assing it on stage.
No.
You know, like, everybody's, even lyrics Drake didn't write.
Yeah.
He tried to perform the shit out of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's not rapping over the reference. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think, you know, and I'm sure that in everybody's journey, they, you know, somebody drills that down into them and they rehearse and they get it. But, like, I just think it's an important component to all rappers. It's an important thing for you to be able to, like, control a stage, hold a stage down, get your words across, deliver them to people. You know what I'm saying?
1,000%.
Breath control, live, all of that.
Having to learn, and you know what, I've seen it for several years, is one of the greatest disservice to up-and-coming artists. When they start buzzing, if they have like a record that's resonating and going viral or is a hit record, the powers that be, or whoever they're signed to, is going to thrust them onto a national stage, have them doing tours, have them performing at the Rolling Louds and all that shit. And these people are not seasoned performers, and then they wind up playing themselves out super, super tough. Like, an example recently is Ice Spice. I've seen that happen to her. And, what's funny is she's actually not whack.
Yeah, she's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I've only heard a couple of songs, and I'm like, oh, there's something happening here, and I haven't dug deep.
There is. There definitely is. It's more, but the way she's being marketed and the way she's being just kind of forced,
thrust out there,
thrust on a national stage before she has a handle on her creative process, then you see her struggling to find the beat. Right. You see her, you know, not being, having her head wrapped around her cadences and things like that.
She's not trained like that.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, and like, and again, it's back to the consumer technology thing where you can have so many reps in the studio now.
Uh-huh.
And have no reps on stage.
Right.
That's rough.
Yeah. All the punch-ins and all that.
Yeah. Like you can write a song and record a song that there's literally no way for you to perform on stage because you didn't leave yourself any room to breathe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Which is kind of like, to me, I'm all about pushing boundaries forward, so it's something different. You know what I mean?
It's hard for me to get into that style where like they punch every line in, and I see the energy of it. Like, my son rocks with that stuff.
Right.
And I see the energy of it. I see that it is new and different, but like, just as a trained rapper, all I can think about is, damn, you playing yourself, because you're not going to be able to do this.
Right.
Like, you've literally not left a moment for you to have a sip of oxygen. Like, there's no way you're going to be able to get through this verse.
And then you also come from the school of rappers like Micah Nine, who didn't have a millisecond of oxygen his damn self.
Right.
But guess what? He could replicate that live
to
a T flawlessly. I'm not really sure if he's a regular human being. Like, he's a super, super human.
He was born to MC, and you add that with his jazz proclivities, and like, he's more of a jazz instrumentalist as a rapper than he is just like a normal, you know, like
he's like a trumpet.
Yeah, it's like an alien playing trumpet. Like a whole nother thing that's happening with him, you know. And you, like the breath control we're talking about is from like his understanding of jazz and like taking that deep breath in the beginning and just metering out the oxygen as the CO2 as necessary to, you know what I'm saying? And the circular breathing, he can do that too, where like he can be exhaling and inhaling at the same time.
Yeah, it's,
you know what I'm saying? Like
he's like playing the didgeridoo, yeah, essentially when he raps.
It's nuts.
You know, like, you know, having a background being from Chicago and then cutting your teeth in LA as well, it's like it's interesting on so many levels. Now LA has a lot of different styles, like you said, you know, like that's why someone like AD has a fruitful, successful rap career, but never heard of the Blowed. Right. And then you come from there. Yeah. You know, like it's really interesting. But, you know, there's multiple different gangster rap scenes in LA. There's a whole hipster rap scene. There's traditional backpacker in the line of, you know, like the Sick Jackins and the, you know what I mean, Psycho Realm, and then even the whole People Under the Stairs contingent and Dilated and all that. There's all these different scenes, and then there's like the hyper lyrical double time cadence Project Blowed stuff. And to me it was always interesting that, you know, Chicago's similar too. You got the whole Chicago, you have the whole hipster Lupe Fiasco, you know, Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa movement. You have the whole obviously drill music, you know what I mean? And then you have the Logan Square cypher scene and then like a kind of a more for lack of a better word, like black version of that, which is in the South Side, kind of evolving from Common and, you know, No ID.
Hyde Park and South Shore.
100%. And then, of course, you got like the West Chicago snipers. That's what they call it, sniping, the same way we call it chopping in L.A. The double time cadence. And
going back to Crucial Conflict, psychodrama, all of that.
Yep. Speed Not Mobsters.
Yeah.
What is it about, like, why are these styles prevalent in LA? What is it about the double time style that makes it popular in LA and Chicago? Now, the only other places I feel like that really were the origins of that style, you could obviously look to like certain rappers from New York from back in the day flipping it. But to me, it was Memphis, the Bay Area, LA, and Chicago. And really, like, I want to say Chicago and LA are like the epicenters of that style.
I think you nailed it. And honestly, I can't say I understand why the west side of Chicago and South LA came up with the same rap style. Like that, like I think about that a lot. And you talk to the OGs, like you talk to LA Cool, like he talks about it too, how, you know what I'm saying? Like they just, there's a certain kinship. And honestly, I don't even know how. I don't even know how. Like it doesn't even make sense. You know what I'm saying? That the good life in the early 90s and in the streets of the West Side, like, people would have ended up rapping the same.
And does it have anything to do with, you think? I mean, the West Side of Chicago is way more, quote-unquote, country than the South Side, right?
100%.
And that's kind of like a more country bounce.
You know, I think that makes sense.
Or am I reaching too much?
But I'd say that what I would associate more country is more of a, like a laid back kind of style. Or, or even when it comes to chopping the way Peace used to chop. Like he chopped with a twang. And you know what I'm saying? Like, and it was more like that was more of a country kind of sound where I felt like the you know, the West Side chop of a Twista and a chop of a LA Cool, like it strikes as much more of a city style, like a hood style. Like, you know. But I think the west side of Chicago, like you were saying how there's a bunch of different gangster styles in L.A.?
Absolutely.
There's a bunch of different gangster styles in the west side of Chicago, too. Like, if you look at, like, the Brat, you know what I'm saying? Yep. How, like, her style was more like Snoop's than it was like Common's, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's always been this part of the west side of Chicago that felt like the west side of the country. You know what I'm saying? And when it was East versus West, like, it was like a little mini East versus West inside of Chicago because, like, the south side of Chicago took a lot of cues from New York. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and then Common literally have beefing with Ice Cube and shit. Like,
exactly. But there was people in Chicago who was riding more with Cube than they was with Common. You know what I'm saying? Because there was always this stylistic tension in Chicago. And I know a lot of it was fueled by the fact that, like, and I know I'm super guilty of this, and I had to really check myself when I moved here. In my scene I came up in, which was the, you know, book reading, punchline, you know, four elements, you know, breakdancing, DJ graffiti style in the south side of Chicago, we looked down on that, on chopping.
Right.
We looked down on double timing.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we was condescending about it. We thought that was some stupid shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I think what we were really commenting on or trying to comment on was the fact that, like, a lot of them was saying the same kind of shit.
Or not saying anything necessarily.
Exactly. Exactly. But, like, there's no denying it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no denying it's impressive. There's no denying the energy that comes from it. You know what I'm saying? I used to battle cast, like, especially when I was in college. Like, I used to kill people in battles because I was the punchline king. I
right.
could size you up real quick and think of six good ones and end you.
Right.
But if somebody was coming back, like, they'd have the crowd going, I'd be like, fuck! You know what I'm saying? It ain't nothing I can do.
Hated
like,
that shit.
You know what I'm saying? But when it wasn't really until I moved to L.A. and saw the chopping lineage of L.A. and saw how, like, oh, they look at styling artistically. So, like, there's never a style that's more valued than another style. It's really about, like, how many styles can you master?
Mm.
I was like, oh, okay. I was thinking about this wrong, you know?
But then on top of that, a lot of the L.A., like, blow dudes. And it's crazy because there's certain rap styles that you literally have to go deep in the hoods mm-hmm. of Los Angeles to ever hear. They don't exist anywhere else in the world, but they're very commonplace out here. You know what I mean? It's kind of interesting, especially back then in the 90s, early 2000s.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's changed a little bit
oh,
now.
Yeah.
But
it was a Petri dish.
Yeah, yeah. You know there's so like... much. But these dudes, they were flipping those cadences, but compacting them so much with polysyllabic rhyme
yep.
schemes,
yep.
with punchlines, yep. with wordplay, with metaphor.
And
like,
with, like, knowledge.
With knowledge.
You know what I'm saying? Even if they didn't always know what they was talking about.
Yeah.
They was reading books and putting that in these double time chop styles. And some of them was doing hood shit, too. But, like, you know, I think that's what really opened me up to it when I saw, oh, it's really... That's just another tool, you know what I'm saying? And you can be expressing whatever you want to express, but, like, that's a different tool. And it's not like any one of these tools is better than any other. And, like, I really got impressed and intimidated by how intricate the chop is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And how, like, there's so many different styles of it. Like, you know, Gaja, who just passed away this year.
R.I.P. the homie.
Rest in peace. Like, his shit was so precise. Like, just swinging blades, like... Cool's chop is always a little sloppy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But that's right. part of the energy of it. It's like his whole shit.
It's got swing to it.
Yeah. And it's like every time you hear him rhyming, even if it's in the studio, it sounds like a live show. Like,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Where it's like his energy is pushing himself sometimes ahead of the beat, behind the beat. You know what I'm saying? And then you get his son, you yep. know what I'm saying, who's pushing ahead of the beat too. Like,
right.
It's so fascinating when you start digging in and understanding the math and the feeling and how all of it comes together to make this magic, you know?
1,000%. And also, you know, so, like, if you really analyze a lot of, just for example, Twista, he wasn't just saying a bunch of bullshit up there. Like, he was
a lot of polysyllabic.
Yeah, exactly. Visualized and a critical eyes.
Yeah,
individual died.
Like, nutty like
yeah.
Buddy Love, but still wouldn't leave a bloody
glove.
Like,
yep. Yeah.
He was crazy with it, man. Still is, you know what I'm saying?
No, 1,000%. Yeah. Now, growing up in Chicago, and I know, like, you grew up near the projects and all that, was it kind of weird after you left and moved to L.A. just to see, like, the whole emergence of the drill music scene? Like, I haven't really seen you talk about that too much before.
You know, because a lot of that happened after I left.
No, absolutely.
And I think, like... It wasn't even just the emergence of the drill scene that baffled me. Even the emergence of, like, Chance and them.
Right.
Like, you know, Chance and shout out to Saba and shout out to No Name. Like,
I feel like Lupe blew up right after you left, damn it, because you said 2004 you moved to LA. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because that's when he's on, what is it, Graduation? Or, no,
yeah,
late
yeah.
registration.
Yeah,
late
yeah,
registration.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Touch the Sky and all
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, who is this dude? Right. Because that wasn't from any scene I recognized, but my scene was very underground cypher, like that scene. And,
yeah.
and it wasn't a bunch of people coming up out of there. So that was the scene that I was still connected to. So all the rest of the stuff going on in the city, I wasn't really aware of at all. And I was out here seeing stuff bubble up. I mean, the big thing for me was that, like, the fact that Chicago was starting to have rap stars at all.
Yeah.
Because my entire growing up, coming of age in Chicago, everybody knew if you wanted to get on as a rapper, you had to leave.
Right.
You had to leave. You had to go to L.A. You had to go to New York. You had to go find where there was music business, because there was no music business. Mm-hmm. Like, the first thing I ended up hearing about was Chocolate Industry. So that was, like, the cool kids.
Yep.
And I was like,
that was a whole wave, snap, too. That was, right, a whole wave, like, too.
So Chicago's got some music business now? That's crazy. And then once there started to be a little bit of a business foothold, then Chicago started to be one of them places where the people started supporting their own a little bit more.
Well, it's just crazy how influential, like, even like the, I feel like the cool kids literally changed.
They did.
Music.
It, oh, 1,000, my God. Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the beats, like, yeah, absolutely.
The aesthetic, mm-hmm, the beats, just that whole the energy. Thing,
all of it.
They, yeah, set that off way before L.A. did, yep, you know what I mean? And in the, to the same degree, like Kanye and Lupe and these, you know, Chance, these are such, like, seminal, yep, influential acts. And then I'll say the same thing about Chief Keef.
But see, and that's where I was getting to. So my understanding of drill starts with Chief Keef, and it starts with me seeing videos of Chief Keef fans reacting to his music, reacting, mm-hmm, to when he dropped something, and, like, seeing how connected people was feeling to this music he was putting out. Then I would listen to it and be like, oh, I don't necessarily get it off top.
This,
like,
is dark.
Yeah, it's dark. I do feel the energy, but it's like, damn, this is really affecting people. And then I started to understand what was happening in Inglewood in Chicago more, and how just of a chaotic kind of, like, life it was becoming to live there. And then I started to understand, because this is, again, after I left and I grew up by the projects, then just to understand what happened after the projects got knocked down.
Mm.
And because them projects, as crazy as it could be to live there, and be around them, there were these closed ecosystems.
Right.
Where, like, yeah, it was gangbanging, but it was all very, like, regimented, sectioned off, understood. It was this building, it was that building, it was this building. And you didn't really, like, cross up too much, you know, unless it was for a very particular reason.
Right.
So when they knocked them buildings down, they put people anywhere. Anywhere.
Like the Cabrinis and all that. And Cabrini, yeah, Cabrini Robert Green Taylor.
Got knocked down. Robert Taylor's got Prairie Courts. Like, all, like, there was no thought to if you were putting people from different gangs by each other. There was no thought to the chaos that was going to unleash around the city. And I think Inglewood ended up being the place that, like, caught all that hell.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, the reality that comes when suddenly your neighborhood is filled with people who, set-wise, fucking hate each other. Another thing I'm to understand from that, not being there, but just from understanding people telling me about it, a lot of the captains, a lot of the older heads was dead and locked up around that time, right, too. So the young cats that didn't know nothing but they set and nothing but getting money and nothing but protecting their turf and launching off at enemies, they all just in the streets.
No guidance.
No guidance. Doing whatever. And I think a lot of that contributes to that Inglewood environment. And, you know, when I started to understand that, then it made me understand drill. You know, even if it's not, like, the music I go to, it made me understand it.
I could understand it being a lot of mixed emotions from, okay, there's a lot of young dudes from my neighborhood that are now able to move their families out the hood,
mm-hmm,
making a lot of money, rising to prominence, giving a lot of hope to other young people that, hey, you could overcome these circumstances, mm-hmm, and rise above. And it's kind of like, okay, this is showing them a template, but at the same time, it's perpetuating a lot of negativity, and there's we see the murder rate skyrocketing, and it's kind of just putting on blast what's kind of, because Chicago's always been a rough place, right?
But, yeah, but I think it did. It spiked. I think I really think it has so much to do with them projects. Like, even if just the Robert Taylors, man, there was 30,000 people living in them buildings.
That's fucking crazy.
30,000.
Yeah.
It was like 16 buildings with like 15 floors each. You know what I'm saying? Like, they put them people everywhere. There's there's like 20% of people that they had registered that they don't even know what happened to them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I really think that that changing of the city's, you know, the poverty elements of the city, I really think that had an effect on, like, you know, stuff like the murder rate, stuff like the crime rate, you know?
Do you feel like drill music perpetuated that as well? I know it's a lofty question.
I mean, I think that every style of music perpetuates the lifestyle of the people that made it to some degree, right? And rap has always been a kind of music where you usually you kind of talk about what's going on around you. Mm-hmm. So like I don't put that more on them than I put it on any other genre. You know what I'm saying? Just what rap is you kind of report on the world outside your window. So, like, why would I expect drill to do anything but that? You know? Do I think it's bleak? Hell yeah, I think it's bleak. And I wish things weren't like that. But I don't think that the music is the problem. I think the music is a symptom.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And if shit got better, I bet maybe that music wouldn't resonate with people so much.
And I always felt that that's, you know, the quintessential argument about gangster rap, mm-hmm. and what was going on in LA is this kind of perpetuating it, or is this just, are these the street reporters kind of being a reflection of their environments? And so you coming from out there, moving to LA, these are the two most gangster cities in the country. You know what I mean? I mean, not to say that there's...
I mean, because I'm just thinking, damn, what Houston got to say about that?
No. But, right. I mean, obviously, saying? Yeah, there's Memphis, there's Baltimore, there's Detroit.
Hell
like,
yeah, hell yeah.
But I mean, like, they're kind of... The reason why I say that is they're kind of like the two original strains of the type of gang banging.
And of the big gangs, the Bloods and the Crips, the GDs and the folks. Yeah, like,
yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like all that shit being in Chicago. And then was that an interesting transition? Like, okay, you come from a place where there's all these gang banging politics and you have to watch how you wear your hat and all that. You know what I mean? Like, and then you come to LA, where at that time there's still really active color banging. Now it's more about what kind of hat you're wearing or other things that.
I mean, I think growing up in the hoods I grew up in Chicago prepared me to live in any hood. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like it's, and I usually like, cause I'm really comfortable in hoods. So like I tend to like, especially if I move to a place, that's where I want to live. I want to live like with my folks. You know what I'm saying? And,
right.
And that's typically like in a hood, like. And I feel like it's mostly the same, man. I feel like it's mostly the same. I feel like really the main rule is, at least what I've seen in the last 30 years, because it might not have been like this before, is that for the most part, if you not trying to be in that shit, they not really fucking with you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think there might have been a time in like the early 90s, mid 90s, when it was more just open warfare, and as soon as you set foot on the block, it was on.
You're
like,
getting pressed.
Yeah, like you, even if you ain't from somewhere, you got to claim you from somewhere, or else like you a neutron, and that's not even good. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like for the most part, if you ain't about that, you all right. And if you're trying to be about that, it'll come to your door.
Right.
But, you know what I'm saying? Like I feel like it's mostly chill now. It's mostly families. It's mostly people trying to live their life from day to day. And yeah, you know, shit happens and people get caught up in it. But, you know, I feel like the politics now are only important if you're trying to play the politics.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you feel like you being, because, you know, obviously you have a rap style that's very different from what a lot of these kids are listening to.
True.
However, you're not pretentious at all. You're able to meet people on their level. You're super down to earth. You could interact with pretty much anybody. And that's not just these, you know, collegiate, super brainy people. You're able to chill with.
Yeah, man. I live in Inglewood, man.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's kind of a, do you feel like the people that need a lot of the messages you have to kick sometimes it's often lost on them?
100%. I had a song, a line in one of my old songs. You know, I'm trying to reach black people in a room full of whites.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is my existence, man. You know, I feel like, and more and more, like, there are more people of color coming to my shows, which is great. But I feel like the main problem is culturally the way a lot of my people receive music is through the biggest channels. Mm. You know, it's through radio. It used to be through music videos. Like, now it's through, like, you know, the marketing channels that...
through the No Jumpers.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say even more like the cosign system, mm-hmm. which is completely major label dominated. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, and that's the way that my people hear stuff. And I can't, like, all I can do is make my music and put it out the way I know how to do it. And when I have resources, I try to get more attention on stuff. But it's still like my biggest, the biggest way I reach people is through music writers. You know what I'm saying? And it ain't a bunch of fucking black people checking out Pitchfork's new releases. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's some, but that's not, like, culturally, that's not the dominating way we hear stuff.
And if it is, like, and if it is black folks, it might not necessarily be the ones that are in the trenches like that. You know 100%. What I mean? Like,
and so, like, you know, that's really another thing that I miss about not having a weekly project blow. Mm-hmm. And even though, like, everybody there wasn't super hood, it's in the hood, and you'd get people to come and check it out. And even if, you know, even if the style of music that we doing isn't changing their life, they just see options. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, like, because I used to, like, all every job I had before I started doing music full time was working with young kids in bad situations to some degree. You know what I'm saying? And one thing I learned coming out of all of them jobs, like working in halfway houses, working in schools and hoods, like, you know, I taught special ed for a minute. Like, the most important thing you can do in that environment is role model different behavior that they haven't seen.
Mm.
That's the most important. Like, you can tell them what to do until you blew in the face. What they actually pay attention to is what you do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
If one of the kids say something crazy to you, do you fly off the handle? Do you speak to them with patience? Do you try to follow whatever behavioral program y'all have? Do you take it personal? Do you get emotional? Like, that's what they're paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in there, like, being yourself and offering them options, that's the most valuable thing that you could do.
Wow. And it's crazy because I remember around the time that I first was coming around you and meeting you and stuff, I thought you actually dressed the way that you were showing up, but, like, mm-hmm. nah, you were, like, coming straight from teaching gigs and shit. Yeah. So you had, like, you weren't
button up on, maybe, you know what
I'm
saying?
You weren't dressed like a rapper. I thought you were making a fashion statement because it wasn't even like that.
I mean, well, one thing, I didn't know how to dress. That's one thing. Like, I had, you know, I had a little journey with that. And then the other thing is, I used to have to try to wear stuff that could work in the classroom or in whatever, you know, job I was working in, and also, you know, kind of work on stage, maybe. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I didn't have time to go change and shit, you know?
No, it's just really interesting to see. And, like, I know you said you don't have much time today, so I don't want to keep you for too long, but a few other things I wanted to touch on. First and foremost, you know, you... coming from that Project Blowed scene, mm-hmm. coming from the scene that we came from,
mm-hmm.
there's been some examples of people that really made it and impacted on, like, a superstar level and transcended in a lot of different ways, you know? And I'm talking about, like, Anderson .Paak.
Yes.
I'm talking about Flying Lotus.
Yep.
I'm talking about Doja Cat. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't really. Dumbfounded, All City Gym. I don't think people realize
that there's a central kind of scene that it all came from.
Yeah.
They don't.
And y'all really... each and every one of y'all in different ways are really, like, a perfect representation of coming from that environment.
Yeah, it's a weird place, man. And all styles were welcome and all styles were supported as long as it was dope and true. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's reflected in all of these different styles. And then, like, I think the thing that's really unifying is that everybody is really good at what they do.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. That's the one thing the blow that whole scene wouldn't let you be is whack.
Please pass the mic.
Yeah. They wouldn't let you be. Like, you know, you keep coming back until you figure your shit out. And then once you figure it out, you're good. Once you can hold your own in that cipher, you're good. You know what I'm saying? But, like, that's...
And they want you to be yourself.
They definitely
whether you
want
a Pigeon John or a Tumex or you know what I mean? Like
a bus driver. A subtitle. Yep. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, be weird. Do you? Like, ain't nobody, you know what I'm saying? Like, what the only thing anybody was concerned with was whether or not you could rap. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
That's the only thing anybody ever gave a shit about is whether or not you could rap.
And you can flip whatever style you want.
Whatever style. There.
One of the themes that you had a whole album about it a couple years ago. You're very vulnerable in a lot of your music. Mm-hmm. I mean, in all your music. You were talking about divorce, and which resonates with me because I got a divorce a few years back and followed that up with a lengthy relationship, which unfortunately deteriorated some months back. And been kind of having a difficult time coming to terms with how therapeutic was you channeling that energy into your music and being so butt naked about it all.
You know, it's so funny, man, because I just put out an album that's like the complete antithesis of that.
Right.
Because of how hard it was to make that music and put it out. Like, the whole journey for me even making it was I was going through all that shit and sitting with my therapist, and my therapist having to tell me, like, yo, well, this is a white lady, so she didn't say yo, but she's like, do you know how lucky you are that you have an outlet where you can use words to paint whatever picture you want to paint? Like, my biggest problem as an emotional being is I have a really hard time processing my feelings. Like, I'll just sit on them. I'll just tuck them away. And then they just bubble up. But like, I have a medium, I have an outlet, and I can use it to help me process what I'm going through. And that was like this revelation for me, because I never really used my music like that. Like, I could be honest or truthful, but not really like vulnerable emotionally in my music. I never did that. And so when I made them songs helped me so much. Writing them songs, recording them songs, hearing them songs back, it helped me so much. But putting them out, that shit was weird, man. Like, that shit was weird.
It's like taking a shower in front of the entire world,
yo,
right?
Like, and then like, and then like charging people for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then, you know, having to promote it. Like, that was really the weirdest part, I think. You know, social media era, we make some shit. You know, especially if you indie, it's on us to let people know about it as many ways as often as possible. And I made that shit, and like, you know, having to promote singles, promote articles written about it, it wasn't no tour dates, but I did a release party, and like all of this shit were like, you gotta have a certain amount of distance from this work, I feel like, to keep being okay with pushing it out like a product, because this didn't feel like a product to me. It felt a little too close to being the actual essence of who I am and what I was going through. So I felt so weird. Hey, buy this shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, there's a limited edition records. Come get them. Like, it's because it wasn't that kind of project. You know, I'm reading reviews, cross-eyed mad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I put out albums. It's like that was like my sixth album. Like, I'd been through that shit. Like, I already have the distance from that.
Right.
Like, it's not fucking with my world.
By the time you're mixing and mastering and all that shit. Yeah.
And like, so, but for that album, like, if somebody had something to say about it, it didn't feel like they were saying something about a product. It felt like they were saying something about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't deal with that shit. Like,
well, it's always difficult to remove yourself from your art in that regard. But I'm curious, like, how it was received by your ex.
I mean, I had to talk her through it, like on way before it was done.
Yeah,
you know, while we were making it, we were like going through couples therapy. You know what I'm saying? While making this stuff, like, I had to make a couple of decisions very early on. Like, I'm not going to tell the story of what happened here.
Right.
I'm just going to be talking about my feelings about things. And I think that kind of gave me the room where I didn't have to worry about like dragging her through the mud or, you know what I'm saying? Not that there's even to drag her through the mud.
No, because it could be perceived that way. If
right.
You're,
the perception of it.
Because you're ultimately we're only hearing one side of the story.
One side, exactly.
And even if there's records where you're putting yourself in her position, it's still your interpretation of that.
And I'm already the public figure in a relationship. So, like, it's all weighted different anyway. You know what I'm saying? So I had to have a lot of conversations with her about, yeah, it's called this. Yeah, I'm not saying nothing personal in it. Yeah, I can send it to you ahead of time if you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of that shit. Because, yeah, her comfort with it was very important to me, too, because I didn't want it to be like, I didn't want people looking at her weird based on nothing I said.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think obviously she was with you, so she knows this is how you channel your creativity. Right. And she obviously, you know, at least had some level of appreciation. Yeah, you know what I mean?
For sure.
Of how you got down. But so you say your newest project is the polar opposite.
Yeah, man. I put my armor all the way back on. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just rhyming and having fun and you know, trying to just make the music that, make the kind of music. Spiritually, the kind of music that really always made me love hip hop. And that was never really nobody telling all their business. That was never really the thing for me. Like, it was people being very creative and making songs that had impact, beats that had impact. Like,
some Native Tongues type vibe.
Yeah, Native Tongues shit. Like, you know, Diamond D, who I had some beats from him on the album. Like,
Lord Finesse is literally like one of my heroes.
You know what I'm saying? But like that shit, like literally digging in the crates, punchline rap, like Big L, AG, like, that shit is incredibly important to me. And I felt like I got into a place where if you listen to my music, you wouldn't even know that.
Right.
So I really wanted to turn all that around. I really wanted to focus on my influences in that way and kind of like big up all of the music that I love, the rappers that I love, the producers that I love. Like, and it's a much more enjoyable process. You know what I'm saying? To be talking about my feelings and shit.
I'd like to hazard a guess and say you're still being more vulnerable than you even realize just by proxy because of just the nature of how honest you are as an 100%. Artist. So it's probably still,
I mean,
you know.
And you're absolutely right. And I think that's something I might have lost sight of, too. Yeah. That, like, just the fact of me being the person writing the punchline means it's going to be a little more, it's going to come from a different angle than, you know what I'm saying, Drake writing a punchline. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's gonna have a little more... It's going to be a more personal statement because it's me making it, and those are my values.
Even though you're still approaching it from like a superhuman, like superhero MC level.
Trying to understand that I, like, that the craft of rapping is that important to me. You know what I'm saying? Really wanting people to know that. Like, no, I do this. Like, I'll rap in your face on the street for hours, and I want you to hear a little bit of that in this music.
Sounds awesome, and I'm a huge fan of your music.
Appreciate you,
very
man.
Grateful to be the homie of you as well. Now, you do so much other stuff outside of rapping, from your podcasting, which is going crazy, to your comedy, to just intellectual workshops and all that. Like, what's the focus looking like for, you know, going into 2023?
Man,
is it difficult to find that balance between all your pursuits?
I tell you this. In the past, it hasn't been, because typically I'll make some music and then I'll like try to do some other shit to try to like keep myself in balance that way. Like, I got a pretty big TV thing coming up that I can't really get into detail of.
Let's go.
It's pretty dope. And hopefully I'll be able to make an announcement about that in January. But like, uniquely coming off of this album, damn, I want to make some more music, like, right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's, like, one of the few times where I'm like, fuck, okay, I got to figure out how I'm going to do both of these. Because, like, career-wise, financially, like, you know what I'm saying? The TV shit is always, like, it's knocking everything else out the box.
Yeah.
But, like, the spiritual place, the emotional place that I got into making this last album and seeing how it got received, it makes me want to lean into that more. It's like, oh, I gotta make sure there's room for both of these. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
And I was having a conversation with our brother Satire about the same thing the other day and just kind of finding a balance between the different pursuits. But at the end of the day, you're a creative entity and you just...
I gotta be to eat.
and you eating.
I'm doing
courses all right. In this motherfucker.
I'm doing all right, man. I could do better, and I'm trying to do better. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hopefully this is introducing a different audience for...
And I appreciate you having me because of that.
I encourage all y'all, you know, that might not be familiar with... I know a lot of y'all are, but those of you that aren't, look into this guy. You won't be disappointed.
Maybe you heard something 10 years ago, I'd say definitely dip back into the last couple of projects and see if there's something on there that strikes your fancy.
With that being said, any final thoughts?
I'm happy that y'all have the space, man, these type of discussions. Like you said, as a podcaster, man, I just know how valuable it is to have artists, you know, for them to have the capability to tell their own story and write their own narrative, man. So I really appreciate you, you know what I'm saying, you having this and you having me on, man.
Anytime. Like, there's so many different directions we could have gone with this conversation.
We gotta
like,
come back.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a part two and all that.
We gotta go back, man.
And check out Open Mike's podcast, What It Happened Was, mm-hmm. I believe is what it's called, which is fire.
I appreciate that,
and he delves
man.
Really deep into a lot of cool topics with some of the most interesting people in the culture and beyond. So
I appreciate it.
With that being said, play a partner, Lush Uno, OME, and we about this BR. Y'all, this BR.